This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Dougie Fista, give you that conversation right now. I'll tell you about Vegas. Tell you about Eric Bedard.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen in Ballard.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Yeah, big day today on a Friday here on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com as well. Mariners with a big win and a big loss all in one yesterday. It was a strange, mixed up, emotional day for the Mariners, who got the much needed win, get Jared Kelnick back in a big way, and then lose Julio Rodriguez. So, you know, are you happy? Are you not? I think overall, yes. I think the good outweighs the bad yesterday, but the Julio thing is something we're going to have to address, and we got some news on it this morning, courtesy of our friend Greg Bishop, who will join me coming up here in a half hour. He wrote a big piece on Julio Rodriguez at SI.com. Worth your time. Well worth it. It's great. It's really just a fun look at Julio and how magical he is and just what a charming person he is and just how much he's beloved instantly by everybody who is in his circle. I mean, it just, you'll love it. Trust me. But in it, he says that the Mariners are likely to put Julio on the IL 10 days, but that he will be back in time for the end of the season and a postseason run that should follow. So, maybe they're waiting on the MRI. He's supposed to get that today in Kansas City, but maybe not. I mean, maybe the goal is, hey, they're just going to rest this guy. Maybe you wait a day because you can retroactive it to yesterday. But, you know, maybe you just say, hey, look, magic number is 9. Julio is going to, you know, really be more important in the postseason. We can do it without him here to only win a few more games, which is all you need to do. And let's bring up Taylor Trammell, or, I mean, I guess if you wanted to, you could do it with Kyle Lewis, but I would think they'd want the extra glove, because I don't know how much Kyle Lewis is going to be able to play the outfield right now.
Right.
So I would think you just bring back Trammell and say, all right, let's go. Let's see what we can do here for 8 or 9 days, or 10 days, whatever it is, and then let's go.
So if it was 10 days, the 10th day would be Sunday the 2nd.
Okay.
Which would only leave a few days. I think the 5th.
Right, but I think that means you get him back for the doubleheader.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, okay, get him back for the Detroit series doubleheader. Off you go. And give him a couple of days there to get himself back into, you know, his timing, et cetera. And then you're off.
Tuesday to the doubleheader, yeah.
Right. So that gets you back in time for the doubleheader and then ready for the postseason. I'm into that. I think it's the right thing to do. We'll see whether or not it ends up going down today. And we'll talk to Greg about Julio in general coming up in a half hour at 7:30. But what we saw yesterday from Jared Kelnick, oh my gosh. A comfortable, productive Kelnick would be so amazing here for the final few weeks. It's almost hard for me to imagine it. Seriously. There's so much to like about what he did yesterday. He was comfortable in the field, right? I mean, he's a good outfielder. He took a great walk in the middle of a rally in the first inning, right? That was huge. He launched that home run, launched it. That ball was destroyed.
He doesn't miss fastballs.
He does not. Then, here, I'll play you the play-by-play of the double. He comes up a couple innings later, lefty on the mound, man on base, works a 3-0 count, and then does this.
His pitch to Kelnick. Swung on and roped into the gap right center field. It is down. That's a base hit. Kelnick steaming around first. He wants two. He is flying into second. Sliding feet first into second. He has a double. This game is tied. Jared Kelnick's big day continues. He has homered. He has doubled. And he has tied this game. It is 5-5.
Oh, man. The hustle on the double. I forget who it was. I think it was Luke Arkins. Had his sprint speed fastest of his career on that double.
Really?
Fastest he's run at any point in his career was that double. Trying to get on second base? Dude, I'm telling you, there is a reason this guy was a top five prospect in baseball. That wasn't an accident. 5 tools when he's right. He's different from Julio. He does it in his own way, but he's special in his own way. He brings a competitive streak, the hustle, and maybe he sparks them. Maybe. Maybe this is the little spark they need to get that offense going. We know what he did last year in September. I don't want to be a sucker because he had one good game, and certainly it does not overshadow all the challenges he's had. But as Jerry DePoto told us yesterday, when he was down in AAA, he made some changes to the way he was making decisions, and it sure seemed to help him.
You know, in the time that he was back in Tacoma, what we saw was a major shift in his swing decisions. And when I say swing decisions, the pitches he was choosing to swing at and what he was choosing to walk by, how much more discerning he was. And that was the biggest challenge from a baseball skill development perspective that was in front of Jared. And this was the most meaningful improvement that we'd seen him make.
All right. Well, if that's the case, and then he carried it into the big leagues, awesome. Let's also remember and hear what he said at the end of the game to Brad Adam. He said, "Hey, I'm seeing the ball well right now." Good. Good.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
See the ball well and destroy it like you did yesterday. Again, there is a reason Jared Kelnick is as highly thought of as he has been. Jared talked about that yesterday as well. Don't forget why he is where he is.
JK has incredible baseball skills. You know, under the radar, because he struggled the way he did, you know, in the big league, he had a 930 OPS in AAA, finished third in the PCL in OPS as one of the two youngest players in that league. And, you know, we still lose sight of just how young he is and how talented he is.
Yeah, he was one of the youngest players in the PCL, AAA. He is one of the youngest players in the big leagues. But he shows you why you don't just forget about Jared Kelnick. So that was awesome. I loved it. I couldn't have been happier watching him succeed yesterday.
I want to know the Kelnick era.
How did you feel about the Gatorade bath?
Yeah, we're getting lots of texts wanting
people
to know
what you think
all right,
about that.
So let's get dramatic, people. You want to get into the soap opera? How is it I get all the grief for being Mr. Soap Opera? And then what do we get? 1,000 text messages at 866-979-3776, Mac and Jack's text line. How many text messages did we get about Kelnick's reaction to get doused by Ty
Fran? We got tweeted out about it too, but
all right.
I have never seen a teammate douse someone after a game like that and then just the teammate dead stare back
right.
at them. Have you
right.
seen that before?
Maura.
Not one ounce of like, that was funny. Just like,
I do remember seeing that years ago, but it was with like, I forget who it was. Brock or Kyle would remember if they were here. It was like an old man who got doused with the ice water
different.
And was like, I think you might kill me. Like, please don't
that's
do
a little
that.
Different.
All right. What is the deal?
About the vibes? Like, they're
right.
having so much fun. Is he going to be grumpy the whole time?
Maybe. That's okay. First of all, there's nothing wrong with grumpy. It's okay to be grumpy.
When the whole rest of the team is talking about their chemistry because they're having so much fun, there might
How
be.
Many dwarfs were there, Maura? Seven. And they all got along. What was one of the dwarfs? 1/7 of the dwarfs was grumpy. It's okay to have some grumpy gusses around.
I just took it as like, in his mind, he's like, I've been here for 25 minutes. I had one good day. Let's not start Gatorade bathing me until I really show that I'm, you know, worthy of it.
So you need to give him a death stare?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a strange reaction.
There's a couple of explanations. One is exactly what Justin said. He's embarrassed. Hey, come on. I haven't done it at the big league level yet. I've failed for the most part. Let me wait until I've actually, you know, can do this at a regular basis. Let's not make too big a deal about game one. I understand that if that's his view. That's a possibility. Look, we don't know. We don't know what's in his head. Second possibility, we kind of misread it, that it's sort of a joke, right? He gives him the death stare, and then you could see right at the end of the clip, he's in the club or in the dugout hugging somebody. So maybe he wasn't as mad as it looked. Right. Maybe it's a sort of like, oh, you son of a. And then he goes and gives him a hug. Right. Maybe that's the relationship there. Right. So let's be very, very cautious before we start crushing Jared Kelnick for being a negative Nelly, which, by the way, is OK if he is.
Yeah, you're fine with that, of course. The other thought I had was like, maybe you just had this conversation of like, hey, I know we got a shower and get on a plane. Would you guys not throw a Gatorade bath on me? Like,
yeah. Right. And then they did.
Yeah, they're like, no.
Number three. Maybe he's got a cold and he doesn't want to be doused with water in that point.
Okay.
Number four.
Right.
Have you informed Luis Castillo that you've moved on?
I'm not ready to talk about that yet. Hold on.
Wow.
Let me get to the fourth possibility of what's going on with the Kelnick death stare. Uh-huh. And then I'll get to how he may be coming between me and my guy.
Wow.
Number four. He's pissed. You don't want to be here. Right?
No.
He's trade bait. The only reason they brought him up now was to get his trade value higher so that this offseason they can deal him if he can just show a little bit of success at the major league level. There's no room for him anymore here in Seattle.
Yeah.
And he's done. He don't want to be here. He doesn't want to be with this group. He doesn't like the management.
He doesn't feel a part of the team, the magic.
And he's just
the
out. Yeah. That's a possibility, too. If I had to rank the possibilities, that one would be pretty low on the list, honestly. I don't think that's the case.
I think
we're missing it. I think he is having fun, or it's some combination of, hey, don't embarrass me because I haven't done enough yet, and hey, this is just part of my personality, and that's sort of his way of relating. But I'm not going to ignore the possibility that he's mad and that he wants out. It certainly seems possible, but I'm not going to focus on that. My good vibes, man, are all JK.
Okay, fifth option. His phone was in his pocket, and he was like, come on!
Have you ever seen that happen to somebody? Somebody get thrown. My buddy pool. Joel got thrown in the pool. You met Joel.
Yep.
Joel threw my buddy Chris right into the pool while he was holding his phone. So funny.
Yep.
Yeah, he ruined that phone.
Used to be a lot more devastating than
I know. Yeah, this was like 15, 20 years ago. Anyway, you can join the Mariners fans tonight and tomorrow at one of the official watch parties. The one tonight, Queen Anne Beer Hall. I'm told the great Kevin Martinez will be there.
Oh, all right.
How about that? Tomorrow at Rhine House, both places will have giveaways and specials for fans wearing Mariners gear, and you might even see the moose. Whoa. Maybe I'll bring my kids. Find more info at seattlesports.com/events. All right. Let's come right back. We'll give you everything you need to know. Greg Bishop on Julio coming up. Bob Condotta joins us at 7:45. Joe Fan, G. Scott, your calls. And, that's pretty much the whole morning. So don't go anywhere. Just stick around right here. We'll all hang out together. It is the Brock and Salk Show. Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, from the depths of despair yesterday to the loftiest heights, man, a full day's worth of emotions for every Mariner fan as the team took a lead, blew it, came roaring back, showed off its full muscle, and got the win. Wins are great. You need them. Each one drops that magic number countdown even closer to that magical moment where they clinch. But yesterday was pretty sweet, right? Salvaging a win the way they did, and then having Jared Kelnick play hero, that made it even sweeter.
Here's the pitch to Jared. Swung on and belted. Deep to right field. Capel going back, looking up, and goodbye baseball way out of here to right. Welcome back, Jared Kelnick, his fifth home run of the season, and his first official at bat since his return because he walked in the first. Belts a long home run way into the bleachers in right field here in the top of the fourth inning. How about that? It's now the A's 5 and the Mariners 4.
Just an absolute cannon shot from Kelnick there. He went 2-for-3 with a home run, a huge RBI double. Just a magnificent day. Scott Servais, happy to have him.
Julio, concerning again. It's the same area in the low back, and you know, we're going to, he'll get a workup tomorrow when we get to Kansas City to get an MRI and pictures of that. But, he felt great before the game. He was running around. We see him lead off the game, first pitch of the double. He scores shortly after that. As he was running out to take his position in the second inning, he just felt it kind of grab on him. He said something to Haniger in the outfield, and at that point, he's like, Hanny was watching. He was like, this guy isn't right. So, you know, we went out and talked to Julio, and they don't really do anything stupid out there to make it worse.
Yeah, obviously, there's the bad news. Julio Rodriguez forced to leave the game with the back issue. Going to get an MRI in Kansas City, but Scott, as you heard, did not sound too confident. Greg Bishop, who will join me coming up in 10 minutes, just wrote a big, long piece about Julio. He reports he's likely to go on the 10-day injured list, but should return by the end of the season. Mariners get back to it tonight. First pitch just after 5 in Kansas City. And then on Sunday with the Seahawks playing the Falcons, you can catch the Mariners-Royals game in its entirety on 770 KTTH. Pre-game coverage starts at 9 with Trident Talk. First pitch at 11 exclusively on 770 KTTH.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, yeah, speaking of those Seahawks and Falcons, 1:25 start on Sunday. Atlanta, they're certainly in rebuild mode, but they're also going to give us a glimpse of where we could be, right? They opted to sign Marcus Mariota, an option here in Seattle, a move that we talked about. And then also they drafted Desmond Ridder, another guy we discussed. That was a fourth-round pick and out of Cincinnati. So kind of a curious quarterback situation there. Injury report improving in a few ways. Good to see Artie Burns as a full participant in practice for the first time in a few weeks. He looked like a starting corner before he got hurt. Curious to see how he'll work himself back in. Center Austin Blythe did not practice yesterday, so that's a position worth watching before Sunday. Regardless, going to have to see if this offense can generate its first points in six quarters. Pete has promised they will be more aggressive and the Geno can handle it. DK Metcalf, I would say, would be excited.
I mean, Geno's shown, you know, great poise in the pocket. He's, you know, led us, you know, throughout the whole week, you know, and not only as a quarterback, but as a leader, you know, of this offense, of this team. And, you know, just to hear Pete say that, you know, finally, you know, it was a sigh of relief to, you know, let Geno actually go out there and just play free and not, you know, have any restrictions, you know, as an offense.
Well, that would certainly be fun if they can get DK involved. Look, they spent a lot of money on this guy. They've bet the house on him. You got to find a way to make him a crucial part of your offense.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Break up the Browns? No, probably not. But even without a new quarterback, they did improve to 2-1. They knock off Pittsburgh last night. Heck of a running game. Nick Chubb rushed for over 100, nearly 5 yards per carry. Big NFL weekend ahead. Some very interesting games. NFC West showdown, Rams in Arizona. The Cardinals have played like one good half this year, and the Rams have had issues in both of their games. So see which of those teams is moving in the right direction. Battle of the Bays, Rodgers and Brady, two old guys who still look like they're among the best in the game. And then, of course, I hope everybody will be watching Sunday night, Denver hosting San Francisco. Can you root for the Niners? Easy answer, yes. Of course I'll be rooting for the Niners. Well, I'll be rooting against the Broncos, so kind of the same thing. It's everything you need to know, and we do that quarter past every hour here on Brock and Salk, the new Brock and Salk show. How about that?
How about that?
How about it?
We're getting a lot of texts and people's hypotheses on Jared Kelenic.
Yeah.
Too, so no consensus answer, it seems.
Someone said maybe allergy to Gatorade.
It's allergic to Gatorade bath.
Total possibility.
You're right.
Right?
Really good
Look,
call.
You know, I think he's in a weird spot, and I kind of don't blame him. Like, he has been the best. He's like the best player wherever he's been his whole life, right? And now he's in a situation where he was supposed to be a big part of the team this year for, you know, his own reasons. He has not been. And I mean, I'm not saying that's not his fault, but obviously he's not been a big part of it. I'm sure that's hard. And I'm sure celebrating becomes even more challenging given that, you know, he's not in the position he thought he would be. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys. I had a moment when I was in high school. Maybe this will ring true to somebody else. Maybe not. Maybe I'm a jerk. But I'm not a great athlete, obviously, but I did play varsity sports at my very, very bad sports high school. And so I was on the basketball team my senior year. I was on the basketball team junior and senior year, but I played a fair amount. And then something happened. I missed a practice because I think my family was out of town or something. I didn't get to play, or something happened in this game where I barely played, or I played terribly or something like that. And at the end of the game, everybody was super happy, and it was a challenge, right? Yeah. You want to be a good teammate. You want to, you know, take the same joy in the win that everybody else did, but you didn't really help. You didn't participate.
You didn't carry weight. Yeah.
You didn't carry the weight. And it's not just a personal glory thing. It's not a, like, I'm mad because I didn't get mine. It's more of, I'm upset because I don't feel like I deserve the praise. Mm-hmm. And if he feels that way, it wouldn't surprise me either. I was, you know, 17. I think if that were to happen now, I think I'd be able to overcome that a little bit more and take the same joy out of the team victory. But, you know, hey, look, if our station comes in first in the ratings, but our show is 20th and everybody had to overcome the show, do I feel as good about it?
Just going to make the same analogy. Other radio stations I worked at, our show wasn't one.
Right. It hurts a little bit. You're like, God, I want to be able to pull my weight. I want to do my part. Do I want to go out and celebrate the same way, feeling like everybody's looking at me? I don't know. I can understand where he's coming from. Greg Bishop wrote a tremendous piece about Julio Rodriguez, and he will join us next. It is Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Texter here from the 206 saying the Gatorade ruins Kelnick's frosted tips. Common knowledge.
It's very funny.
I don't actually think it was Gatorade, though. I thought it was just ice water. right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't think the ice water does anything to the frosted tips. So, unfortunately, I don't know if that was the the problem. But I do like the thought that it was just a fear of Gatorade ruining some frosted tips for Kelnick yesterday. Hey, look, maybe he's just salty. Some people are salty, and maybe that's just a part of who he's going to be this year. So thank you to everybody who's noticed that I am, doing the show from my couch today. My kids have been are home, that my wife is not. So somebody's got to get them going in the morning. So thank you to everybody for being a little patient with me while I help my kids out in the morning. That's where I've been running off to here during all of our breaks, and they're now off to school. So thank you to everyone. Greg Bishop with a tremendous piece I had an opportunity to read already. It's on the front page right now of SI.com, all about Julio. Great timing, Greg. This was awesome. Way to, write this great piece, only to have Julio get hurt.
Well, Salk, there is such a thing as the SI jinx.
I'm aware.
Now it's working in real time now. I've definitely lost quite a few stories over the years in similar situations. And let's just say I was praying to the journalism gods last night and this morning that we'd at least get to put it out into the world.
Well, it's out, and it really is tremendous, and just tells a story of a kid that, as you said, is magic. What did you learn about Julio along the way?
Yeah, to me, the biggest thing is what's possible here. This is a guy who I think if you just looked at his talent, at what he can do on a baseball field, the speed, the ability to hit, the way he plays defense, the fact he plays a premium position and made himself into a center fielder, all of that would be great. If he was just that for the next 10 or 15 or 20 years, it would be pretty amazing. And yet, I think what's possible for him because of his personality, because he's different, because he seems pretty human and relatable and authentic, and because he can play on top of all of that, I think the ceiling is no less than best player in baseball, which I think is exciting if you live here, if you've lived through the seasons that Mariners fans have lived through, and if you want the postseason drought not to just end, but for them to have a real chance to win the whole thing. And I think he gives people like that, people who care about the baseball team here, reason to really think that everything is moving how they'd hoped, maybe even better.
Well, yeah, it's funny, when you say best player in baseball, I don't know that that's an exaggeration at all. I think he absolutely has that kind of talent. It would be a really interesting experiment almost to find out what it would be like to have the best player in baseball, have his personality, to see what it would do for the game.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, one of the things that stood out to me in the story is when Ichiro said, I said to him, is Julio going to be the face of baseball? Can he be? And, I use a shorter version of the quote, but what he said was, you're asking the wrong question. There's so many variables that go into being that person, keeping that perch. But what really happens is he needs to be. And I think what he meant was that Julio is connective, that he's infectious, that there's a something to him that's just a little bit different, even compared to a lot of other superstars. And that because audiences can relate to him, because people want to tune in to watch him, he needs to be the face of baseball because that's exactly the person the sport needs right now at this time. And I think, to me, it was right on the nose because I think, I've done a million of these profiles, a lot of them NFL, but some baseball too. And the way that people talk about him and the way that his skills became so secondary to the story, even though they're immense and growing, that struck me as incredibly unique.
It's funny that the story is called The Magic and Meaning of 21, and you talk about him finding his own way in the world, not wanting to take Junior's path, that he's his own unique human. All of that is true, but it's funny you use the word magic because when I think of Julio, the player I compare him most to is Magic Johnson.
Wow.
I think
it makes sense.
I think he's got a lot of magic to him.
And he's, right away, incredibly important. If he comes back and is healthy, I could see them making a little run here. Yeah, I love that comparison. And to me, it speaks to personality and youth and exuberance and all the things we're talking about. And I think that's highlighted by a couple stories within the story. And, one of my favorites was him being 19 and calling Jerry DePoto and essentially telling him that one of the people they had to let go during the pandemic, a coach that was incredibly valuable to him, was somebody whose job, he thought had a lot of value and if possible should be saved. And I just think there's that sort of you know, kindness to him and empathy, a humanity that really stands out. And I think you could say all those same things about Magic Johnson. I wish I'd had you a couple of days ago, you know, maybe we could have got that in.
Well, I there's something about the comp, even as simple as both being too big for the position that they're playing. It just, I don't know, there's a lot of similarities there between the two of them. Another one that I found interesting about the story is it's always great to, you know, hear, you know, and see what we see, but the teammates, right, the locker room, you can't fool. What are his teammates saying about him?
Well, that's the thing. They love him, you know. I remember talking to Ty France, and you know, the other day, and Julio calls Ty his babysitter, and he says that, you know, he's kind of been in charge of keeping him on track this year. And what Ty did not want to talk about at all, and I totally get it, was the, you know, the postseason drought and how long it is. But to hear him talk that way, like, this guy played in the All-Star game this year, and, you know, to say that Julio's the best player in baseball, he said it as in, like, right now, to say that he's infectious and easy to follow, to say that his personality changed their clubhouse and helped bond them in a way that I think we've seen play out over the season. But you just don't hear that stuff a lot. In general, when you do these and the guy's 21 years old, I get a lot of, like, hold your horses, you know, it's like, don't oversell too soon. And I kept running some of these notions I used in the story by people, you know, different sources I was working with on the story, and just saying, am I making too much of this? Am I trying to make this into a movie? Is this being oversold? Mm. And nobody said at all, and usually they would, you know, that sentiment's too much.
Well, especially
when
in
you're
baseball.
Projecting. Yeah, and I think when you're projecting him out, like, there is no such thing as too much right now because of everything we're talking about, the unique combination of personality and skill set, the success at a young age, the backdrop that he's playing in, the drought that seems likely to end. I mean, it's just, it is kind of almost like a movie, but they need the perfect ending for that to happen, you know?
Well, unfortunately, the movie is having that moment that all movies do, right, where you got to go through a little adversity before the exciting finish. This is what, the act two, where you start to find out there's problems, and that is whatever's going on with Julio's back. You actually had a report in your story, it's sort of, you know, important, saying that it sounds like you got word they're going to put him on the injured list.
Yes, and I think if I'm taking an educated guess here, I think that they've been trying to keep playing him, even though he's got, you know, this nagging injury. And I think as a middle-aged man like myself, you can relate to, you know, these things are tricky. They tend to last. A lot of times I'll wake up in the morning after playing some terrible golf and my back will be sore and the rest of the day is impossible to get through. And I think what they want to do is shut him down for real, give him a couple days, you know, let it really rest, see if it'll heal, and then ramp it back up. But I would add a disclaimer to all of that that I just said, and that's that, you know, nobody knows what the MRI is going to show. So I do think there's a scenario, one that nobody expects, including Julio, where he ultimately has something on the MRI that's more concerning that could be really bad news. But I would say that's less likely than the other option, which would be him coming back right about, you know, that Monday when they play Detroit.
All right. It's Friday. We're not up for vibes of that magnitude right now. Don't even put that in the universe right now. That would be the worst SI cover jinx ever, and pretty much we'd never speak to you again. So let's hope it's not that.
I think I had one worse than that. I did the cover on Jonas Gray after his 250-yard, four-touchdown game against the Colts, and he was released within 4 days. So this can't be quite that bad, you know?
Well, he's not going to get released. That I think we feel reasonably sure of. Instead, he's going to make $200 to $400 million or somewhere in that range. Hey, I since you're here, I want to talk a few minutes of football with you, and we brought your name up quite a bit last week after Pete talked about how personal that win was against the Broncos. And I felt like, you know, for you and for Seth Wickersham and anybody else who had written about these Seahawks over the years, it must have been important to hear some of that stuff come out of Pete's mouth and some of the other players' mouths, rather than having all of that sourced material have to be anonymous forever.
Yeah, you know, I feel a lot of ways about it. And I think the first thing I'd say is, you know, I never doubted my reporting. I think you have to take very seriously when you're going to write about someone and their life in that kind of sharpness, you know, with a real potential impact for them, not only in the locker room, but out in the real world. we weighed that stuff really heavily. We didn't print a lot of what didn't feel exactly 100% over the top firm. And so, you know, part of me, when I heard the news, wanted to react like it doesn't really matter. But you know me, and I'm definitely petty enough to enjoy it. And I definitely think that it doesn't hurt, you know, to know that we were right. You know, I felt like we were right in 2018. I felt like Seth was right in 2017. And, you know, there was a schism in that locker room that ultimately led to the breakup of a team that could have been a dynasty.
Well, you know what else?
It's not,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, like, you know, sometimes every once in a while we get it right. Not a bad thing.
Well, and the other thing I was thinking back on is the story you wrote when you were embedded with Russ and his group that mentioned Alex Rodriguez. And when I think of A-Rod, I can't help but think of sort of the inauthenticity. And it seems like at the end of the day, the biggest issue beyond the credit that anybody of his teammates seemed to have was an issue of authenticity. And it seems like that was present from the beginning, but maybe ignored for a long time because it was outweighed by the positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, to me, one of the hardest things to do in sports is for a quarterback of a good team to be apart from their teammates and a part of the team. You know, you have to walk that line where you are the star, you are the face of the franchise, and yet you are relatable to your teammates in the locker room. And I think, as we reported a few different times, that, you know, teammates, at least a large segment of them, you know, didn't feel like he was authentic, didn't feel like he could lead them. You know, at the time, a lot of people characterized our stories, all older sources. You know, I said then, and I'll repeat it again now, you know, that wasn't the case. We definitely had current players, and we definitely had older players. And so, you know, I think that it just started becoming more and more obvious from the interception on that there was a schism there and that it was impacting them and that it ultimately would lead to a breakup. And, you know, what I didn't expect was going to Denver, coming back, and then the way that game played out, I don't think anyone could have seen that coming.
How about that? What a crazy situation. But we appreciate it. Great stuff, as always. Fantastic writing. People have to read all about Julio. Greg, thank you. Always good to catch up, and we'll do it again soon.
Anytime, Saul. Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. The great Greg Bishop. And seriously, go read his story. It is a really fun piece all about Julio at SI.com. Let's go from Greg to talk a little more specifically here about the Seahawks. We always do it at 7:45. And so let's bring in Bob Condotta, who, of course, covers the Hawks for the Seattle Times and does a great job there as well. Bob, good morning. I haven't talked to you forever. How are you?
Good, Mike. Yeah. Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Which Seahawks team do you think shows up on Sunday? The one we saw to start the season or the one we saw for the last six quarters?
Well, and I guess that assumes they're not the same team, I guess. You could argue there. But yeah, I think it'll be more of the first team. You know, I'm willing to give a lot of benefit of the doubt that a lot of what happened last week was sort of lethargy after. You know, that's a really tough turnaround for teams. You play on a Monday night and then have to travel on the next Sunday, and especially if you won that game, there's kind of an historic, gamblers sort of know that one. That's a good team to always bet against. Is the team that has to do that. You know, and given everything that went into that game, the kind of the emotion, and you know, obviously that meant a lot to Pete anyway, and to, you know, certain players on that team, I think, as well. So you know, I'm sort of willing to sort of just call that there was a little bit of a hangover effect there. And I think especially with the bad start to that game, it really got him in a hole early, that probably played a lot into it.
When you're around this group, I mean, no more Bobby Wagner, no more Russell Wilson. Do you have a sense as to who's leading this team?
That's a pretty good question for sure, because the other interesting thing there, obviously, is you don't have the quarterback necessarily as the huge leader. You know, Geno is not, or Dulac. I mean, neither quarterback was elected a team captain, which is pretty rare for NFL teams, and you know, has been for the Seahawks. You basically had Matt Hasselbeck or Russell Wilson as their captain for every year of the last 20 years. I think that's still a little bit of an evolving process. You know, I do think Quadre Diggs is a really strong leader on the defensive side, and you know, I would point to him over there. I think on offense, it's probably a little bit more, you know, I think they want DK Metcalf to evolve into that. But, you know, he's still sort of a young guy fighting his way in the NFL a little bit as well. And, you know, I think Tyler Lockett is a guy that way too, but You know, I think both those guys also were so used to that being Russell's role, you know, during all of their careers that it does require a little bit of a different step for them. So, you know, those things usually evolve sort of naturally either by position or by how you play. And so, you know, I think they're going to need that to happen a little bit. But, yeah, you know, this could be a season that does call for some of that as it goes on.
What about the rookies, sort of the other end of the leadership scale? I mean, these kids who are really just trying to find their way a couple of games in, and we've gotten to see them quite a bit. Which of the rookies do you think could grow the most by the end of the year?
Well, I mean, the tackles, it's going to be a continual growth process for them. As good as they've looked at times, I think you are seeing that, especially with the run game, I think the entire offensive line really needs to grow a lot there. And I think you'll see those two guys continue to get a lot better there. And I think they'll get a little steadier with some of the other things. You know, we've seen them get some penalties and some things like that, which are just sort of, you know, Abe Lucas's penalty last week, I think was just sort of a rookie mistake in a way. You know, just kind of losing track of where he was on the field, that sort of thing. You know, the other two who are really playing a lot, well, Boye Mafe's playing a lot too, but then obviously the two corners, you know, technically starters and Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant. And Tariq has been, I think, just, you know, by far better than people were really excited about his potential, but the fact that he's kind of turning that into play on the field almost immediately, I think, is a little bit of a surprise because I think he didn't know he would transition quite that quickly. You know, Kobe Bryant, I think, you know, if you're asking just from where he started to where he could be a lot better play-wise at the end of the year, you know, he might be the guy to point to in part because he's sort of changing position. You know, he'd never played nickel before. He said at any level, he'd never done it at any level before the Seahawks moved him there kind of midway through camp. And so I think you're finding, you know, I think he's obviously had a real rough play against Denver, giving up the one touchdown in that game. But I think he played a lot steadier last week. And I think he's, you know, he's probably going to have to start again. It looks like Justin Colvin's out again. So you'll see him on Sunday. And, you know, so I think he's a guy that could really just get a lot better as he goes on.
What do you think this, you know, Pete said to us that he wants to, you know, let Geno loose a little bit this week. What do you think that actually looks like on the field?
That's a really good question. You know, it was interesting yesterday when we talked to Geno and I asked him, you know, do you feel like you've turned down shots that were open downfield to kind of be safer? And he said no. You know, so, I mean, does that just mean, I guess, how they call the game? And I think that's what Pete means is maybe you just try to call some longer developing pass plays that, you know, require guys to hold blocks longer and things like that, that maybe they felt like they couldn't do last week. So not so much having Geno change what he does, but just kind of trying to change how they call it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That way. So, you know, I think that's probably what they mean, but it doesn't necessarily mean throw. I mean, they're already throwing it at a rate that Pete Carroll's never thrown the ball before. And they've thrown it almost, you know, 2/3 of their plays. So I don't think it means doing anything more. I think it does mean just trying to work, get the ball downfield a little bit more and probably calling some of those shot plays. But, you know, as Shane Waldron said yesterday, calling a shot doesn't necessarily mean you take it either. You know, you still need to be careful with it and all that. So, mm-hmm. You know, we'll be interesting to see what happens though.
I liked your story about quarterbacks and some of the challenges that come with, you know, betting the farm that you're going to get a great one in the early rounds or in the early part of even the first round. Who do you think is the quarterback of this team next year?
It's probably one of the, you know, it's probably a rookie for sure. I mean, I think that was what they set up. You know, C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, you know, if there's someone else that they really have their eye on, that, you know, those two guys are by far, I think, continue to be the top two guys there. Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't think it's either of the guys on the roster that will be the starter. I think one of those guys could still be around maybe, but, you know, with two first-round picks, two second-round picks, all the cap space they're going to have, they're going to have a lot of flexibility to go out and get somebody. So, you know, I do think this is a year where they kind of find out a little bit of what they have with the guys on the roster, but then I think they are going to add to it with somebody.
Do you find yourself interested in the Denver soap opera?
For sure. I mean, how can you not? Just, you know, I was talking last week, and that was the first time I'd ever covered a Seahawks game that Russell Wilson wasn't on the sideline. You know, wasn't on the sideline somewhere. So it was definitely a little odd last week, just, you know, kind of the first game where Russell wasn't a factor at all. Yeah, I went back and, you know, watched a lot of the highlights of that game, and it was kind of following. They were playing at the same time, obviously, the Seahawks, but I was kind of following along and seeing what he was doing. And it's going to be fascinating just to see how that does all evolve. And you know, we still have to wait, I think, 3 or 4 years. I think anybody who thought the Seahawks were validated by winning week one, I sort of don't go there. It felt good for them at the moment. But in terms of validating the train, I mean, I think you still got to wait a little while and see how Russell does in Denver. And then, more importantly, from Seattle's standpoint, see what they do with the picks and who do they get a quarterback here in a year or two to make this kind of all work out. So it is going to be, for sure, interesting to watch that. And the, you know, some of the things you're already kind of hearing about Nathaniel Hackett and how long he might last is definitely fascinating to watch.
Never really seen anything quite like the first 2 weeks that Nathaniel Hackett has had. We've seen some coaches who have struggled. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that. But I also find it interesting just because it's helping us, I think, put some of the last few years in context, right? I mean, like all of the delay of games and issues getting the call in over the last few years, the Seahawks haven't had those problems in the first 2 weeks. Well, the Broncos have. That's making me reconsider some of it. And if Russell throws and loses, I think there's some people who are going to have to apologize to Pete.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I saw a breakdown on Twitter of Russell missing some passes over the middle. Guys looking over the middle, you know, and people were always like, well, why don't the Seahawks call those plays? I think the idea that they, it was always kind of sort of a national media thing and in certain circles that the Seahawks were holding Russell back. I never believed that for a second. But anybody who ever thought that they didn't cater the offense to Russell didn't watch what the offense looked like in 2010 and 2011, and then what they ended up doing with it once they really realized what they had in Russell in 2012 and a lot of the tweaks that they made. One of the other things, just a really statistical thing you can look at, but the whole idea of whether he, you know, is slowing down and isn't going to run as much, you know, he has 3 carries for 2 yards. It's either two carries for 3 yards or 3 yards for 2 carries. I can't remember which it is, but he's barely carried the ball at all in his first 2 games. And, I think that's another thing. Obviously, they wondered, was, is that aspect of his game going to change as he gets a little older? So that'll be, for sure, all that'll be interesting to watch how this all evolves.
I love it. Hey, Bob, good to talk to you. Good to have you on the show. We appreciate it. Great job as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, boys.
All right, there you go. The great Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times does a fantastic job covering this team and has for a long time. All right, from a reporter to more of an opinionist, we'll talk to our buddy Joe Fan next. I got to get his thoughts on where the Mariners are at with their magic number and probably some Russ thoughts as well. And then G. Scott will be here. Oh, my God, we got a busy day. It is Brock and Salk, huh?
The rest is going to blow by.
It's already feeling like, I can't believe it's already almost 8 o'clock. Sheesh. It's Brock and Salk here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.